Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Very happy to be joined now by a man you can hear on our airways from noon to one every weekday, the host of Dog Nation Daily, Brandon Adams, BA. How you doing this morning, my man?
I'm doing great, Sam. Thanks for having me on the show today. I really appreciate that.
First and foremost, we wanted to ask you how your vacation went. I'm sure you and the family had a great time at the beach.
Yeah, we really did. We loved the beach, and it's good to get away. Kids at that age, they were really having a good time, and so it was nice to get away for a week, and then we were excited about getting back and getting going again with the show, so all is good.
That's awesome. Good to hear that. And the dogs, obviously, it's the dog days of summer for a reason, because there isn't a whole lot going on, but we around here certainly obsessed with the dogs. So what do you think right now is the biggest storyline involving Georgia football?
So here's the thing, and I know I may be someone on an island about this, but I actually like this time of year a lot more than maybe the average fan does, the average media member does, and I really mean that as sincerely as I possibly can, because as I say kind of a lot, I like the preseason conversation. When you say what's the biggest storyline around Georgia, I think it's the developing opinion of the team from like within the bubble of Dog Nation, and obviously what the folks there in Athens are kind of thinking and saying, and the developing opinion of Georgia from sort of outside that UGA fandom bubble, where maybe it's a little bit more skeptical in some respects, but sort of watch how that grows, watch how that takes shape. And every time one of these preseason magazine comes out that says we think Georgia's gonna be ranked third, we think Georgia's gonna be ranked fifth, or when some of the Vegas stuff comes out, we're gonna talk about that a little bit later on today on a Dog Nation Daily, that just sort of adds that opinion. People either agree or disagree, and over the course of these weeks it all starts to sort of form here, and then obviously in September we find out if we were right or wrong. But the thing about college football for all of us has always been the conversation that is sort of generated around it, the debate that goes on. And it's really this time of year when that debate gets started, and it's one of the reasons why, even though we're still kind of a long way from games, you don't have a lot of practices going on and things of that nature, you still have a pretty fun conversation taking place, because it's people getting to kind of go on the line with how good they think Georgia and the rivals that Georgia has to play, how good they're going to be.
Talk with Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily. And BA, one thing that this season, so to speak, the non-football season, the off season, the summer, whatever you want to call it, one thing that this brings about is a lot of these hypotheticals and these questions about kind of bigger themes of teams and things like that. And one of them, and you guys, by the way, at DogNation.com have done such a great job of kind of posting some of these questions and giving us stuff to kind of think about. And we'll get to a more fun one later on that you guys posted, I believe, yesterday. But one that Chip Towers writes is, based on raw speed, why doesn't Mecole Hardman get the ball more? And I think that's a very interesting question. And it kind of reminds me of back when Mark Richt was the head coach of Georgia, where you might have wanted to see some guys on the field more, maybe in the backfield, but Coach Richt was adamant that you're not getting there unless you can do everything the position requires, including block in the schemes that Georgia maintained. And for Hardman, it kind of seems like maybe it's similar to that, but it's different in a sense that he's got to prove, or he needed to prove, that he could be sure-handed, because he was a guy that didn't really have that sure position coming into Georgia. Some had him as a DB, some had him as a receiver, but Georgia switched him over and mainly used him as a receiver. So do you think that there's maybe that issue of trust that he'll catch the ball, that we might see him get the ball more this season?
Well, obviously he had a couple high-profile drops, say, a year ago, and yet Georgia kept throwing to him, and by the end of the season, I think he proved himself to be a pretty worthy receiver. And yet, Sam, here is one of those moments in which I think sometimes I get myself in a little bit of trouble with some of the UGA fans, because I am probably a little more skeptical about this wide receiver core for Georgia this season than some other Georgia fans are. And I guess for me it comes down to something you just described there. There is a chance that Mecole Hardman really dazzles because of the athleticism that he has, But you said it, you know, something along the lines of, you know, coming out of high school, we weren't quite sure what position he was going to play. You know, he tried defensive back for a year. I think that was a worthy experiment to attempt. Turns out he's probably a little bit better on the offensive side of the ball. We know he's dynamic as a kick returner. But for me, there's a big difference between five-star athlete coming out of high school, which is sort of what Hardman was, what Terry Godwin was, and truly trained wide receiver, which is what some of Georgia's 2019 signees are expected to be, like Dominic Blaylock and Jaden Hazelwood. These are true, legitimate five-star type wide receivers, not just five-star athletes. And so for Georgia this year, it's kind of, you know, along those lines of, you know, the more talented athletes are probably guys like Godwin and Hardman, and maybe they have really good seasons. You know, the guy that's the more polished receiver is probably Riley Ridley. Now, is he athletically the equal of Godwin and Hardman? I guess that's still to be determined. But of the three, he's probably the closest to being sort of a more polished receiver. And I do think that really matters. I mean, you know, you look at that Alabama trio of receivers that were freshmen a year ago. They'll be sophomores this year. The Jerry Judys and the Devontae Smiths and the Henry Ruggs. I mean, you know, they're not just athletes, but they're like legit receivers. You know, it's obvious what position they play. And I think that's what, you know, national championship wide receiver cores are supposed to look like. In a couple of years, I have great confidence that's exactly what Georgia's receiving core is going to look like. For now, though, you've got dazzling athletes who are learning to be receivers, or in Terry Godwin's case, have learned to be a receiver. And I guess the jury is still somewhat out on what that ends up being on the field here this fall. Plenty of UGA fans will tell you it's going to be really, really good. You know, I think in comparison to the other position groups on this roster, though, I don't think the wide receiver core is necessarily as strong as, like, say, running backs, offensive line, certainly quarterbacks, and then to look at some of the units on the defense, I would not rank wide receivers near the top of the top UGA position groups, I wouldn't say.
Talking with Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily.
Hey, Brandon, it's Ross here. I know in the summer we hit the weights really hard. I know all college programs do. Who's a guy that you could see maybe freshman, sophomore, that really needs to just put some weight on, and if they have a big summer, they could maybe be a big contributor in the fall, depending on, you know, if they can get bigger and stronger faster?
Sure thing. I mean, when I saw Adam Anderson back in January, we were at the Touchdown Club of Atlanta Awards Banquet. I mean, you know, he looks like an NBA player almost because he is, you know, noticeably tall. He's got the real long arms. And you just think, wow, when that guy, you know, adds more weight to the frame, how fantastic is he going to be? And obviously, I mean, I think that's the kind of thing you're going to see take shape here over, you know, over the next, certainly the next year or two for sure. You know, a guy that's sort of already, I think, moving that direction is a guy that plays a very similar position to Adam Anderson. That's Brendan Cox. That's a guy that, you know, even near the end of his high school career, already had that sort of thick look to him that you want to see these guys have. You know, he had already been hitting that weight room hard, and I think that he's, you know, one of those guys is going to do that probably even more here moving towards the start of his freshman season. A guy who had actually told us going back into January that he already gained a little bit of weight was Chris Smith, and I talked about Smith, the 2018 signee, on the show a little earlier this week. That's a guy that I think back in January, he'd already gained, you know, 10 or 15 pounds from where he'd finished off the high school season at. So I think a lot of these guys are taking that really seriously because they know the weight that you play at high school and the weight that's required to play at the SEC is a bit different. I think Kirby Smart would also say that just as important is getting some of these really big guys to slim down a bit. We saw that a year ago with, you know, some of these offensive linemen signees from the 2017 class. Kirby was very serious about, you know, getting them to drop a bit of weight. So that's one of the things I think that Scott Sinclair has been really good at is creating a strength and conditioning program that meets those individual needs. For some, it's about getting a little bit more of a streamlined frame. For others, it's about getting a little bit of a beefier frame. But, boy, whatever they're doing over there seems to be really, really working out.
B.A., we talked about this on this show yesterday, and I wanted to get your take on it. We were thinking about what Georgia's most kind of important game is next season, and a lot of people are coming in with South Carolina and Missouri because they're division games, and I get that. They're, you know, obviously important. Missouri, a team that put up some points on Georgia last season, and South Carolina played Georgia about as well as anyone did last season. But for me, it's the LSU game because of where it falls on the schedule. I think that Georgia should be undefeated going into that game. I know South Carolina and Missouri will be tests, but Georgia's better than those teams. And Tennessee and Vandy both being at home, Georgia should win those games. So that game against LSU, LSU is interesting because it falls right in the middle there where there are 6 weeks before and 6 weeks after. I know Georgia has a bye after LSU. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But for that kind of critical moment, middle of the season, if Georgia can go to Baton Rouge and get that win, then you head into the bye week with a lot of confidence, and then you face Florida. If you lose that game, there might be a lot of chance in that bye week to second-guess yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a really good description. And if you pay attention to things like the ESPN FPI data, they'll certainly – you know, tell you based on their number crunching that the LSU game on the road is tougher than Missouri or South Carolina. Now, I know a lot of people talk up Missouri, and from an FPI standpoint, I guess Missouri's technically a tougher game for Georgia than South Carolina is, at least based on the data there. But the one thing I factor into that with Missouri that the stats people are not going to be able to come up with a formula for right now. I mean, you trade out offensive coordinators in Missouri. You know, Josh Heupel, who was, I think, an outstanding play caller, is head coach at UCF now. In his place is Derek Dooley. And I don't know if Dooley's going to be wearing those hideous, like, gold pants for Missouri the way that he used to wear the ugly orange pants for Tennessee. But I don't think that Dooley is going to be certainly an upgraded offensive coordinator. If anything, I think he's going to be a downgrade there. So Drew Locke, you know, this coronation of him as the next, you know, big first-round pick in the NFL draft, that may not go as planned because I just have a feeling that Derek Dooley's not going to be a great offensive coordinator. Georgia, for what it's worth, has also won all three of its trips to Columbia, Missouri in the past. You know, the South Carolina game even, I think the South Carolina is good. I think they are way better than most of the teams in the SEC East, but I still think there's a good bit of distance between the Gamecocks and Georgia. And for the reasons you said, you know, still early enough in the season that, you know, Georgia's looking for that marquee win on the road, establishing some momentum for, like, the big November game against Auburn and, you know, making a push, hopefully, for an SEC championship appearance again. I mean, that LSU game on the road, I can understand why you would say that is Georgia's most important game because, listen, I mean, you know, ESPN had, you know, their say on that earlier this week, and they talked up the Florida game. Y'all know I don't like Florida. So maybe this is a biased opinion, but I just don't think Florida's going to be good. And I've heard people try to make the case for why they think the Gators will be, and I'm just not buying it. You know, a lot of the myth-making about Dan Mullen I think is a little bit silly. I mean, I think he's a fine coach, but, you know, it's not like he's going to take a roster that has a lot of holes left over from McElwain's swings and misses in recruiting. It's not like he's going to do a bunch of magic with that over the course of one off season. You can't wave a magic wand there. You got to have players. I don't think they have enough right now. So, Sam, I guess, you know, long story short, I agree with you that, you know, LSU on the road certainly has the feel of being much more important than some of those East games other people are going to circle.
Talking with Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily.
I know everyone's talking about the quarterback situation. What all have you heard just about Fields' progression so far, learning the playbook, or just anything really with how he's developed since he's gotten to Georgia in January?
Well, a lot of what I've heard is the same stuff that y'all have heard, and it comes from Kirby Smart publicly. And I think that you read between the lines and some of this kind of stuff sometimes. And I think that if you read between the lines on Kirby, he has done very little to kind of dampen the expectations for Justin Fields. Remember, this is a guy in Kirby Smart who doesn't like these media narratives, these things that get created about, you know, oh, well, you guys have so-and-so as the starter, but that's not, you know, the case yet. You know, he's had ample opportunity to say y'all need to slow down on praising Justin Fields and has chosen not to do that. You mentioned specifically the idea of the playbook. You know, go back to the beginning of the spring, you know, Kirby Smart talked about how, you know, Fields had come in and attacked that, you know, portion of the game, which I think is always the crucial factor for being ready to play. How much can you absorb the cerebral part of being a quarterback? And it seems like, you know, Fields is absorbing that pretty well, at least based on what, you know, Kirby Smart's saying there. And, you know, much the same way in terms of the way that he's performed at practice. I don't think that Fields is a threat to unseat Jake Fromm as the starter right now. I really don't. I think that Fromm is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But I think that Fields, at least based on the sort of descriptions we were getting during the spring, is absolutely capable of playing and probably will play maybe even more than just the sort of, I guess, the new four-game threshold that would define a redshirt season. I think that Fields is going to play even more than that for Georgia this year.
And you mentioned that new four-game, I think it's four-and-a-half-game threshold for being able to be redshirted, and that is certainly going to be big for college football. One other new rule is the transfers, and I know it's kind of weird. I look at this as the NCAA. The NCAA said that we're going to get rid of the thing where players can basically transfer, and schools can't limit where they transfer to. But we're going to let the conferences decide it. So it's almost like it doesn't really matter what the NCAA did there. It's almost like they washed their hands clean of the issue and like, hey, we don't want to be the bad guy anymore, so we're going to make the conferences be the bad guy.
Yeah, and I guess there's still a lot about this that I don't completely understand. The only thing I guess I do understand is it's certainly going to be different moving forward. And, you know, on a lot of things, I guess I'm pretty conservative. On a lot of things, I'm sort of slow to, you know, willingly adapt to change. But in this case, I'm for all this stuff. I think the people who try to act like it's going to be like the Wild West when players have a little bit more freedom, I think that's wrong. I think that's probably an intentionally deceptive argument to sort of keep things the way that they are. I do believe that players deserve more freedom. I mean, listen, you can either restrict their freedom or give them money. You can't do both, right? I mean, it's like, you know, if you're going to take money from your employer, the trade-off there is there are going to be certain things they're going to tell you you have to do or certain things they tell you that you can't do. But you're not going to willingly give up that freedom unless they're giving you some money in exchange, and how much freedom you give up is determined by how much money they're willing to give. In this case, you know, the college football mechanism wants to have it both ways. It wants to take the freedom from the players without really giving them much in return. And I don't want to open a big can of worms on that, but because of the financial situation in college football, I'll just say that I am very much in favor of, you know, virtually unlimited freedom for the players here, because they're putting their life on the line every single Saturday.
All right, B.A., we're going to have a little bit of fun with you here before we let you go. One of the articles on Dog Nation this week that I was alluding to earlier that give you something to think about during the offseason. What's your most unpopular opinion about UGA sports? Now, we want to get yours, but I also want to read you some of the comments we got when we posted that on our Facebook page, and I want you to judge other people's unpopular opinions. So first and foremost, throw one out there that you know you might have that a lot of people just kind of look at you like, what?
Okay, so here's one that may be somewhat unpopular. I don't think the music in Sanford Stadium is that bad.
Wow, that is a hot take right there, B.A. That one gets I know a lot of the fan base gets on that one a lot.
And I understand where that comes from. I really do. But, you know, this notion that there's, you know, like too much of the, you know, like the, I guess it's like 80s, 70s, you know, pop rock type stuff. You know, I go to a lot of these other SEC stadiums. You know, the best I can tell, it's not that different than other places. Yes, you know, in Auburn in November, they were cranking up a little bit more of the, you know, it's almost like the techno music more so than the hip hop music.
Yeah, the EDM kind of electronic music.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that's kind of what I'm getting to on that is I'm not quite so sure that the music in the stadium creates the environment as much as some people seem to think it does. That may be my unpopular UGA opinion, and I'm sure I sound 1,000 years old when I say that.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you know, I guess my counter to you there would just be that I don't even think it's about the fans. I think it's about the environment for recruiting, and obviously I think Kirby Smart has come to realize that, you know, a little bit. But certainly an interesting one from you there. Here's some of the ones that we got on our Facebook page, and I want you to judge these. This one,
all right, please.
Yeah, this one is really funny right here because he calls something out while mentioning it. He says, this is from Brian, stop stupid blackout talk. Every year some idiot says we should black out. No, let's not. We are red and black with silver britches, period. And it's like, well, he mentions black. He says we shouldn't black out, but then he talks about we're red and black, and it's like, well, you know the black jerseys have red on them too, right?
Yeah, so that opinion is actually pretty similar to mine as well, although I am evolving somewhat. You know, it's one of those things where I like the traditional uniform for Georgia. I do like the red and the silver. You know, I like wearing the silver britches on the road. I've sort of softened on the black jerseys a bit. I don't like them as a motivational ploy. I don't mind them as a fashion statement. You know, it's one of those things where I even think sometimes, should they go back and wear red pants on the road again like they used to when I was a kid? And then you realize, that's opening up Pandora's box, and 5 days later, it's
you're going to be Oregon.
Uniform you're going to be in just a different uniform combination every Saturday. So I guess I'm going to try to do my part to hold the line on the traditional uniform, but that's certainly a pretty good one.
My whole thing about that, go ahead, Ross.
What about the black helmets that were against Florida in 2009? You a fan of those?
You know, listen, I just it brings for me
the black
terrible
pants.
Memories.
You can't forget that. They have the black pants, too.
Of 2011 when Georgia's getting drilled by Boise State and Georgia Dome, and they got those awful uniforms on. I mean, like, everybody in the stadium is sitting on their hands because it didn't even look like Georgia was playing because they were getting beaten by a mid-major, and they're dressed like space aliens. I mean, it's just such a horrible, horrible day.
Well, and it's funny, too, when you're looking at talking about the uniforms and stuff, and I'll just say this. I agree with you that I don't think it should be like a motivational ploy or a gimmick. So just do it. Like, don't announce it. You know what I mean? Like, they have this thing where it's like before the season, I think the last time they did it against Louisiana Lafayette, they announced it before the season and made some big deal about it. It's like, what if we're just sitting there in Sanford Stadium one day and they run out for pregame, you know, intros or whatever, and they're just wearing black? You don't have to announce it. So I think that.
Well, I will say, I will say I'm a little bit of a hypocrite on this because, you know, my official position is sort of like standard traditional fare. Mm-hmm. But around this time every year, somebody will come out with like some sort of like artist rendering
concepts,
of what a concept could look like. And I want to say that maybe in the past we've seen like a silver chrome with the Georgia G on the side.
Yeah.
Officially, I don't want to see Georgia wear that. But when you see a picture of something like that, you're like,
cool.
Wow, that looks pretty dang cool.
For sure. Let me throw out some of these other ones at you here. This one is just horrible. Men's basketball success will never be sustainable.
Yeah, I don't believe that's true. I mean, there's nothing that makes Georgia different than, say, Florida, for instance, that at one point won back-to-back national championships. Now, I guess my unpopular opinion is I don't care about any of the Georgia sports one-tenth as much as I care about, football. Mm-hmm. So that's probably more my unpopular opinion on that is that, you know, I'm still sort of 10-1 at least, maybe even 20-1 football compared to the other sports. But there's nothing to say that it can't be, you know, sustainable. Now, is it hard to, you know, build a program as good as Kentucky's is? Yeah, I mean, I think history and tradition matters. You know, Georgia uses it to its advantage in football and basketball. It sort of works against Georgia, but yeah, there's nothing to say that you can't do it.
Well, and look, I'm just going to be completely honest here. Georgia's last coach did not do a good enough job of the things off the court, getting out into the community, promoting, getting the fan base fired up to come, watch the team. And plus, Georgia ran a style of basketball under Coach Fox that wasn't attractive to watch.
I agree with that.
Those two things are going to change.
Yeah,
you're going to have Coach Green.
Yeah,
he's going to be running a motion, much faster offense, wants him to shoot more, wants him to get out in transition.
Yeah.
And he's the great promoter of the program. He's been everywhere.
That's the big thing. I mean, the thing I used to always joke about is Mark Fox style. And listen, Fox is a smart, smart coach. Mm-hmm. He knows X's and O's very well. But I think he knows a lot about the wrong style for the modern game. You watch Georgia game, there'd be three guys standing in the lane. Watch the average NBA game. You know, there's virtually no one standing in the lane while, you know, a team's running its, you know, now a lot even more motion-type offense in the NBA. You know, Fox was the most dissimilar team to the Golden State Warriors of anybody in organized basketball. There was no pace and space. There was no flow. It was a lot of screens in front of ball, basically the dribbler. Just, you know, clogging up the lane. It was just an ugly style to watch, and I can't imagine recruits like too much either.
All right, one more unpopular UGA opinion before we let you go here, Brandon. And I don't know if this is necessarily even unpopular. I just think it's kind of funny. Two different people had this one, both Brad and Ben. Brad just says, students should dress for football games, not rehearsal dinners. And Ben checks in, dressing up for games is one of the worst ideas ever. It's 97 degrees, man. And, I don't necessarily care, but I think that's more directed towards a frat crowd that shows up in, like, button-down shirts with, like, polka-dot pants and bow ties. And I don't really care what people do. I'm a person that, you know, people get on people for, like, wearing jerseys or whatever. I'm like, hey, they're clothes. Wear what you want. Who cares? But it is a little hot.
Yes, yeah, I got to tell you, though, I do love the tradition of, like, the guys dressing up with their ties. And as you said, it's sort of bow ties now. You see a lot of high heels in these games.
The sundresses and things like that.
I just love all that. You know, the notion of overdressed and overserved, which is kind of what some of these students show up like every single day. And lot of the other SEC campuses are either just as bad from your perspective or maybe even worse. Some of the Ole Miss folks, they do legitimately look like they're going to a rehearsal dinner. But that's sort of a unique part of SEC football that I do admit I have to like. Now, I don't dress up at my age that much to go to a game, but I still sort of like seeing the really dressed up students just because it is so counter opposed to what you see in almost any other sporting event, really anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and I'll say this for our purposes covering these games, wearing like a normal, polo and maybe some, depending on how hot it is, either shorts or pants. It's like the invention of dry fit is amazing for SEC football.
Oh, yeah, especially, some of these September games, and we'll find this out soon enough. We'll remember it soon enough. It's hotter in September than it is now. It's crazy how hot it can be in September sometimes.
Yeah, and Georgia playing South Carolina early in the season on the road. I will have my dry fit that day because I've never been as hot as I have been for some of those early South Carolina kicks in Columbia. So it's going to be
nuts. Nobody wants to see me sweating through a shirt. That is not a pretty sight.
Yeah, especially not a button down. B.A., love our chats with you. Always love catching up. And we'll have to do it again soon. And we will also tell everybody right now, Dog Nation Daily, noon to one today. You and Jeff Centello have some good recruiting notes.
Yeah, we're excited about having Jeff on the show today. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily. Thank you so much, BA. We'll talk to you again soon.
See you guys.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.